Well, hey, everyone, we are here for this week's culture segment, and I'm going to introduce you to Lee Strobel. You may know him because you have read the book The Case for Christ, and now that he's a film superstar as well, having been involved in a film project related to that, you know, we just know that he's super cool. But he is here to talk with us today, and we're going to have fun doing that. So, Lee, welcome to the Boundless
Thank
Show.
Thank you. I've never been accused of being super cool. That
well,
is the first time. I'm
going to
put that on my resume.
We believe that people should just we name it, and then they can aspire
there
to it.
There you go.
So,
that's
you know,
great.
Having been on the Boundless Show, that's just going to label you right there.
Well, I will say the Forbes magazine called me the cooler Han Solo.
Oh, wow. Well, what in the world? That's pretty awesome.
I know.
That's good.
I thought
right
that
there.
Was really cool.
That's great. Well, we know, I mean, those who have followed you for a long time, not that you're old, but we're just going to put it out there. You know, I mean, many folks know you as having worked for the Chicago Trib back in the day, being an atheist who set out to disprove the claims of Jesus Christ and became a Christian in the process. After your wife had already become a Christian, you were freaked out by that.
Yeah.
So wondering, was your marriage even going to hold together with this this Jesus freak now that was in your home? Well, it's you are obviously the person then to talk about the topic we're going to talk about today, which is really extending yourself and being a normal Christian living in the real world, but being compelled to share Christ with the people who are in our sphere. And you've actually written the book with Mark Middleberg, The Unexpected Adventure, Taking Everyday Risks to Talk with People About Jesus. And so we're gonna do that.
Cool.
This will be fun. So, okay, I think this is just one of those weird, like, awkward things that we find ourselves in. Because you think to yourself, you know, and you've heard it from the pulpit, okay, you need to go out and evangelize. You need to share Christ. You need to, and we know any of us that have been around in the last 15, 20 years, been alive, there are lots of tools to make that happen. A lot of folks have been like, okay, memorize this or use this, you know, pattern of whatever, or do this or that. And then we just kind of freeze up and we don't do anything.
Right.
First of all, how do we even, you know, we feel like if we don't just see the non-Christians in our life and immediately want to spurt out, you know, the gospel to them, that we must not be Christian enough or spiritual enough.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about the heart connection with how we get the want to do this.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. We titled the book The Unexpected Adventure because we really want to posture it that way as being an adventure where you don't know what's going to happen. That's a little scary, but we got, fortunately, God on our side, so we don't have to be too scared.
Yeah.
And what's the worst thing that someone can say to us? Well, I'm not interested in talking about that. Well, that's not going to crush us.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think when Jesus said to be salt and light, what he meant was to be salt, in other words, to make people thirst for God, to be light, to shine his message of hope and grace where we go. And that doesn't mean grabbing people by the collar and spouting four spiritual laws at them necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about the fact that in America, the average person who comes to faith hears the gospel six times before they come to faith.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you may be number three.
Yeah.
You may be number six. I think one thing that's been encouraging to me and to a lot of people is what my friend Cliff Konecki said. Cliff is a sidewalk evangelist for university. He used to be. And he was very good at it. He was not obnoxious. He was just very good at it. But here's what he says. He says, you know, a person coming to faith is like a chain with many links. He said there's a first link, a middle link, and a last link. He said, sometimes I'm a first link. Sometimes I'm a last link. But most of the time, I'm a middle link.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I have not been called by God just to be a last link.
Mm-hmm.
I have been called to love God and to love people. And I think that's the key. If we love God and we love people and we seize those opportunities that God opens up to have a conversation about matters of faith, where we ask more questions than give answers, where we validate the person as being valuable in the eyes of God, where we respect them as being on a journey. They may not be as far as we are yet. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have a no strings attached attitude, where we say, you know, I'm going to be your friend regardless of whether you ever come to faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have. So I think that idea of being links in a chain is liberating. Mm-hmm. It's like in baseball. You know, if you don't necessarily have to hit a grand slam every time you're at the plate. Sometimes the person's on third base and you just got to bunt.
Yeah.
And, you know, so sometimes we're interacting with someone. They're very close to coming to faith. We just need a little bunt to get them across the home plate. So I find that to be an encouragement.
Yeah, that's great. You actually have a story related to that that I'd love for you to tell about inviting a coworker to an Easter service, showing up at the office and making that happen, and then actually hearing from someone down the road related to that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was. I was a pretty new Christian, still an editor at a newspaper in Chicago, and I was getting ready to go home that day. And I felt very specifically compelled by God to go into the business office and to share my faith and invite my atheist friend to Easter services at our church. And because I felt so convicted I needed to do this, I thought something great's going to happen, mm-hmm. right? So I walked in with great confidence and looked around, and all I saw was my friend behind his desk. So I said, "Hey, how you doing?" He said, "I'm doing great." I said, "Hey, you know, Easter's coming up." He said, "Well, Strobel, you know I'm an atheist. I don't observe Easter." I said, I know, but Easter's when we remember the resurrection of Jesus." He said, "Oh, he wasn't resurrected." I saw actually as good historical evidence he was, and began to give him some of the evidence historically that convinced me that Jesus did rise from the dead. And I went on for a few minutes, but I could tell with him it wasn't working. So now I'm scrambling. What do I say? So I said, "Well, let me ask you this. Do you ever have any questions about God?" He said, "No." Okay. I said, "Do you ever think about God?" He said, "No." I said, "Well, let me ask you this. You like music, right?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I love music." I said, "We got great music at our church. Why don't you and your wife come to Easter services at our church? I think you'll love the music." And he looked at me and he said, "I don't want to go to your stupid church." So I said, "Okay, hey, listen, you know where my office is if you ever got a question." And I walked out and I thought, "What was that about? Why would my wires get crossed here?" Because to this day, he's still an atheist. Mm-hmm. But then several years later, I was a pastor at a church outside Chicago, and a man came up to me after a service and said, "Can I shake your hands and thank you for the spiritual influence you've had in my life?" I said, "Well, it's real nice, but who are you?" So let me tell you my story. He said, "A few years ago, I lost my job, and I didn't have any money. I was afraid I was going to lose my car. I was going to lose my house. I needed a job for a while, a paycheck. So I called a friend of mine that ran a newspaper. I said, 'Do you have any odd jobs I can do to earn a check for a while?'" The guy said, "Well, can you tile floors?" And I said, "Yeah, I've tiled our bathroom." He said, "Well, we need some tiling installed and repaired at the newspaper, so if you can do that, we can pay you for a while." So he said, "Great." So he said, "I went to work at the newspaper." So he said, "One day, not long before Easter, I was in the business office in the newspaper. Now I was on my hands and knees working on the floor on some tile behind a big desk, and you walked in. I don't even think you saw me there. And you start talking to this guy about God. And you start talking about the resurrection. You start giving the evidence Jesus rose from the dead. You start inviting him to church. And this guy was shutting you down. But I'm sitting here on my hands and knees working on this tile, and I'm hearing all this stuff, and I'm thinking, I need God. I need to go to church." So he said, "As soon as you left, I called my wife. I said, 'We're going to church that weekend, Easter. She said, "What?" I said, "Yeah." So he said, "We came to your church that Easter. I came to faith. My wife came to faith, and our teenage son came to faith. And I just wanted to thank you."
Oh, my goodness.
So I thought this is a new form of evangelism, ricochet evangelism. You know, you share your faith, it bounces off a hard heart. You don't know where it's going to go.
You were both link one and link three in the same conversation.
That's right. See? And, you know, the funny thing is, I think in heaven, we're going to find out about a lot of times when we felt bad because we felt like we blew it, where we tried to explain the gospel. We kind of faltered or fumbled, and the guy walked away, or the gal was not interested, and we felt bad. And we're going to find out in heaven, a lot of those people are going to be there. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be link one through five. We never knew that they came to faith. God will do as God will do. And I think it's never wasted when we share Jesus with someone.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. I mean, I know in my own situation, I have a good friend who had described herself as a Methodist Buddhist, I think, like it was some kind of ethnicity or whatever.
Right.
And I remember I'd shared the gospel with her, like, you know, front to back and all the, you know, did the big sell and everything. And she was just like, "Yeah, you know, thanks, whatever." And then when my dad died, it was like 4 months later. And she was like, "Hey, you know, I'd love to take you out to lunch and just talk about how you walked through that season, because I just saw a piece about you." And I remember being all offended, you know, like, "Oh, seriously? Like, I've shared the gospel with you several times and now you just want to talk about this."
Yeah.
But like, I was so concerned with, like, you know, what my words were, what I was saying. And it was like, God chose to use actually a hard time in my own life to speak louder than me making some presentation to her. And we ended up having a great, great conversation about that.
That's a great example.
It's really fun. I mean, speaking of, Lee, I want you to talk to, you know, I think a lot of times we feel like if we're going to share the gospel, we have to be ready to answer every question that may come up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in a situation where it's like, okay, well, you know, tell me about, I'm just trying to share my faith very simply. And someone's like, yeah, but what about the Crusades? Or what about abortion? Or they start bringing in all these other topics. And then I'm like, blah, you know, what do I say? How can we even have the courage to step forward and share in a winsome way when we may have a fear about, like, what if I can't answer all the follow-ups?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there are questions for all of us that we can't answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key thing is we have to be emotionally and intellectually prepared. When someone asks us a question, sometimes we need to say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next thing you can say is, but let's find out together. So if they ask me a tough question, I say, you know, golly, I don't know the answer, but why don't we check it out? And then there's all kinds of Christian resources out there now that can help you do that. It gives you another chance to have a God conversation, another chance to engage spiritually, and can lengthen the opportunities and the relationship and so forth and deepen the relationship. So I think we got to be honest. You know, I mean, I've been stumped many times with a question, and but God's opened up the door to go further with the person.
Yeah, that's good. To that point, we receive a lot of questions from our listeners who want to know about sharing their faith in the context of work.
Yeah.
So they're at Bible study, they're in church, they're around their Jesus people and feel really confident, really secure. But then they're like, oh, great. Well, I don't want someone to hate me. I don't want someone to sue me. I don't want someone to.
Yeah, exactly.
What are great natural segues in the workplace to talk about faith?
It's a touchy issue because especially if you're in a supervisory role, because you don't want to communicate to your coworkers or to your colleagues or to people who report to you that I'm going to judge you differently because you're not a Christian. So, you know, it's snarky.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to be careful that we don't communicate those kind of impulses. But I think often at work, at least in my experience, we develop some of the best relationships, you know, friendships and people you really like, and you like hanging around with them. And so what
just
often
happens, the sheer value of time you spend with someone at work is a huge chunk of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there are people you like to go to lunch with and people you like to, you know, have go out after lunch and after dinner or whatever and get together. And so I try to, at least when I was in the newspaper business, to rely on those off-hour opportunities. So to spend my time at work trying to live out my faith in an authentic way, certainly respond to questions as they come up or whatever. But when I wanted to get into a serious spiritual conversation, that's usually when I invited someone out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important that you do it one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been mocked or challenged for my faith on a one-on-one relationship or conversation, whereas in a group, people get very snarky. So you try to have a one-on-one conversation. But I'll give you a quick example. My boss, when I was a brand new Christian working at the newspaper, it was going to be a very busy day at the paper. And I prayed and said, God, help me get through this day. I know it's going to be hard. And he did. I really got through it well. And so my boss came up to me afterward and he said, hey, Strobel, man, I saw you really handled yourself great today. That was terrific. And then he had invited me out earlier to go golfing on Sunday, and I turned him down as I was going to church. So he knew I was a Christian. And it's good to plant those kind of seeds just so people know you're a believer. So he said to me, so what's this Christianity thing to you? Because he saw in me something in that day that brought a calmness and a peace in the midst of the turmoil of the newsroom that intrigued him. So I'd never shared my faith before. I thought, you really want to know? And he said, sure. So I said, well, let's go in your office. So we went into his office and closed the door. And for the next 45 minutes, I just gushed out. I made every mistake probably in every evangelism course in the world. Just told him my story of coming to faith, why I believe, and so forth. And when I walked out of that encounter. It was like my entire life up until that moment had been a black and white movie made on 16 millimeter film with scratchy sound. But that 45 minutes was like Dolby stereo with Technicolor. And that's what really told me, this is, I need more of this in my life. That's the unexpected adventure mm-hmm. of the Christian life.
Yeah, that's cool. I have a friend who also became, you know, another unique way I think a lot of folks can step into this space is to kind of be that listening ear
yes.
for folks. There are so many people, I remember just coworkers telling her, even talking about wanting to date and mm-hmm. saying, if I want to find someone quality to date, I just don't know what to do other than hang out at bars. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what we do. And
yeah.
and just being a listening ear to those folks about
right.
you know, their problems and about the challenges, because so we're so self-focused that I think Christians have the opportunity to step outside of ourselves and
yeah.
be in that space for folks.
I think that's especially true when someone, a colleague or someone at work is going through a tough time
mm-hmm.
that you know about. In other words, a mom dies.
Mm-hmm.
Or and you know, it's funny how, and I think back to the death of my parents, how few comments I got or anything from my non-believing friends at the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I remember very vividly those that did reach out to me
mm-hmm.
in those moments of crisis.
Yeah.
And we can do that. We can be a listening shoulder. We can be someone to empathize. And they're going to see something in us through that that I think is going to spark spiritual curiosity.
Yeah, it's funny because my mom actually died a few months ago, and I was pulling into my neighborhood and up to the mailboxes. And I actually had one of my neighbors follow me out to the mailbox because he'd heard that mom had died. Mm-hmm. And he just started a conversation, just plowed in, and he's like, Lisa, he said, so sorry about your mom. He said, you know, I just really, you know, I feel so bad and stuff. And I said, oh, thank you so much. And he just starts in. He's like, do you like think about heaven a lot? It was just, he had lost his mom not too long ago. And it
yeah.
just brought that up. And it was
yeah.
just a great entree for me to talk, whereas probably I wouldn't have had that opportunity.
Yep.
Moving in with any other subject or any other moment,
yes.
you know, where I would have tried to force it, but just to have that opportunity was so cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just to have our antenna up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and to be aware of those key moments in people's lives that are happening.
Yeah.
Where they're really, they won't say it, but they're looking for someone to connect with.
Yeah. Okay. So opposite end of the spectrum now, because now you've been a teaching pastor in churches, you teach in a Christian institution. You're just Mr. Christian now, Lee. You know, you're not in the newspaper biz as much. And what about those folks who maybe feel like they can't get out of the Christian bubble or that
yeah.
Christian, you know, I go, you know, maybe I work wherever I work or I work for a Christian organization. Then I'm in Bible study. Then I'm in church. How can they create relationships with folks in the sphere that they run in where they
yeah.
feel like they're having to craft something or force it?
Right. And I think the key word there is intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be intentional because we got to break out of this Christian cocoon that we're in sometimes
mm-hmm.
to relate to those people who desperately need Christ outside the church.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple things we can do. Number one is invite non-believers into activities that you're doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
yeah.
none of us has extra time in our lives. If you say to someone, hey, you got an extra 10 hours a week to go out and build relationship with unchurched people? No,
yeah.
nobody does. But you can invite them into something you're going to do anyway. You know, if I'm going to wash my car, I could say to my non-believing neighbor, hey, why don't you bring your car over, wash them together. I'm not going to add 1 minute to my time, but we build a relationship, and who knows what God might open up in terms of an opportunity. We're going to watch a sporting event on TV. Invite your non-believing neighbor to come watch it with you.
Mm-hmm.
During the commercials, who knows what conversations might flow.
Yeah.
If you look on my calendar, I have a paper calendar with a box for every month because I don't know how to work computers. And so and at the beginning of every month, on the first day, you'll see two things. First thing is a marriage thing that I ask myself every 30 days. And the question I ask myself is, how would I like to be married to me? So I have that on the first day of the month. So I ask myself that question. It helps kind of me to, you know, figure out what I need, how I need to improve as a husband. The second thing on my calendar is, who are you reaching out to this month? And so I'll look at my month and I'll say, nobody. I don't have anything. There's no lunch schedule with a non-believer. There's no activity schedule, no golf game, nothing. So then I'll get on the phone and connect with a non-believing friend or someone in a neighborhood and say, hey, let's get coffee next Tuesday or whatever. I want to get something on the calendar. And it helps to have accountability. My friend Mark Middleberg, who co-wrote the Unexpected Adventure book with me, we hold each other accountable. Who are you building a relationship with? Who are you praying for? Who are you reaching out to? And so it's not a guilt trip thing. It's just a gentle encouragement to say, let's be heads up and be intentional. The other thing is, and I do this a lot, this is one of my main forms of what I call the unexpected adventure. I call it strategic consumerism. And by that, I mean, I go out and Leslie and I eat out a lot at restaurants, not fancy restaurants, just hole in the wall places. We like to do it. We're kind of foodies. So what do? We try to go back to the same restaurant over and over and over again. Why? So we can get to know the owner and the wait staff and the cooks and so forth. And we become like their pastor. I mean, we get to know them. We tip them well. Every Christmas, we give them a little financial bonus, but we also give them a copy of one of my books or a tape or Christian material. We look for opportunities to get into spiritual conversations. So sometimes they'll come and they'll sit down with us, you know, and when things are going slow, and we'll have a conversation and they'll tell us about their lives. We kind of see them like our kids, because there are a lot of them are younger than our kids, and we kind of feel parental toward them. And we've gotten to build so many great relationships with so many people. And I'm thinking recently, one of them was a guy who came to the United States from Colombia, South America. He's a drummer in a rock band at night, and he's worked as a waiter at this one restaurant we would go back to. I don't like Mexican food. It's not, I just don't like it. I eat at a Mexican restaurant at least 3 days a week because I like the people. Because the people, I love the people.
Yeah.
And so he was one of them. And so Leslie and I were just a few weeks ago having lunch there, and he was serving some other tables, and he came up to us. And I'm telling you, just the look on his face, I knew something had happened. Mm-hmm. It was his face was just bright. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and he said, "I did it. I received Christ. Aww. I prayed to receive Christ." And he said, "And I met a guy, and he's a Hispanic pastor, and he's a wonderful guy, and I love going to his church. I love reading the Bible." And he was so excited. And I said, that's why, even though I don't like Mexican food, it's why we keep coming back to this place, because I love these people. And that's been a joy. We're going to go out and eat anyway, because my wife doesn't particularly like to cook. And so if we can combine it with opportunities to share Christ, that's the best of both worlds.
That's super cool. Just as we finish here, Lee, just give us a quick idea of, because we've talked a lot about strategies for meeting people and sharing and inviting. Talk to us a little bit about the supernatural. How do we partner with God in this process? Yeah. Trust him in prayer, trust the work of the Holy Spirit to go before us, and really be mindful of that as we're seeking to be in relationship.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because I just wrote a book called The Case for Miracles, because I tend to be a very rational person. I did come to faith through the miracle of the resurrection, for the evidence for it. But I want to know, is God still doing miracles? Is he still involved in the world? And I spent 2 years investigating the supernatural for that book, and it's really made me much more attuned to the supernatural. And so, you know, we're not alone in this process. That's the encouragement I get, is to know that the Holy Spirit is always with me, and that he is in me, and that he's going to use me, and that he's going to give me the words to say, and that he's going to be working simultaneously in the heart of this person I'm talking to, and that and just to be not alone in this scary, because it is a scary process. Everybody, Luis Palau, the famous evangelist who's shared the gospel through his public rallies with millions of people. My buddy Mark and I asked him once, "Do you ever get nervous when you talk one-on-one to someone?" He said, "Every single time." We all get nervous, but to know that we're not alone, that God is sovereign, that, you know, it doesn't depend on how well we explain the gospel. What matters is we love God, we love people, he'll work through us. We just need to relax in that. And I think through that we'll be stronger salt and brighter light.
So true. All right, folks, the book is The Unexpected Adventure, Taking Everyday Risks to Talk with People About Jesus. And what's so cool about this book is it's a collection of stories. So actual boots on the ground, real life stories of how this has been put into practice, and to encourage you and to realize that you do have a part in this, and it can be really exciting. So, Lee, thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure.